Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. From the moment we're born, we're encouraged to pursue success at school, in our relationships, our careers, and life. But what does success really mean? Some count it in accolades and advancement, others count it solely in dollars. And then there are those who count it in acts of service to family, community, the less fortunate, or, like this week's guest, to the creation of a new universal dream for humanity's future. Steve Farrell reached the pinnacle of Silicon Valley success as co-founder of two high-tech firms, and then he woke up to a new vision of helping people everywhere awaken to our interconnectedness, to our potential for evolutionary change, and to the power we each hold to heal societal dysfunction and create a better world, not just for some of us, but for all of us. An evolutionary pioneer and co-founder of Humanity's Team, along with Neil Donald Walsh, Steve Farrell joins me now to discuss his book, New Universal Dream, which chronicles his uplifting and empowering journey from Silicon Valley to embracing a life of true success by answering his soul's calling. Steve Farrell, welcome.
Sandy, thanks so much for having me. I am delighted to be here with you.
Delighted to have you. So you were one of seven kids of divorced parents working full-time jobs. So hard work and success must have been imprinted in you from a very early age. I mean, you write about even having to earn the money to pay the dentist bill for your own braces. So what was your definition of success growing up in the early years of founding your business as well?
My definition of success was going out into the world, making a difference. I didn't, when I was young there, as you mentioned, with my mom, single, divorced, my sibling in a small home, I didn't yet have a dream of starting businesses or doing something more important than that, such as what I'm doing in Humanity's Team. But my definition of success is I wanted to get out. I wanted to be a contributor. I wanted to make the world a little better place. And if it did involve business, that I might do something, be a contributor to business that could be fruitful in all of what that means. Of course, I wasn't awake then, so it didn't include awake kinds of elements, which we'll get to later in the story and in the book.
So how did you build such successful businesses? I mean, what qualities, what characteristics in yourself did you have to call upon to do that?
The biggest thing is, and this is something here for viewers, I think, too, it's listening to that still small voice, being guided by that still small voice, not letting the worldly noise direct our path, because our family and our friends and coworkers, they're well-intentioned. They love us, actually, and they want to help try and steer your ship, but they're usually trying to steer the ship towards something that is more stable, more conservative, just more kind of punch the clock. And fortunately, I grew up on some level really understanding this divine presence, this that is here, that loves us and that guides us and supports us if we open ourselves. On some level, I think I experienced that even when I was young. And so that was the thing, because that allowed me to overcome the resistance when I first moved from that home that we're talking about now out to San Francisco, and I was 21 and I didn't know anybody. And then I get a series of successful jobs, and then I'm in IBM, I'm on the executive resources list, and then I leave and with my partner get a little, the teeniest executive suite we could find, inexpensive used furniture, and start this organization. And this was another case where my family and friends thought I'd lost my mind. I had the ticket. IBM in the 1980s was the place to be. I was called to something else. And then, of course, that's really the story of my life, just following these callings as they came.
Before you had the calling to change all of that, where did you think your future lay?
Well, as I mentioned there in the book, and I know that you read the book, Sandy, I had this experience when I was young there in high school where I was with my guidance counselor. I'd taken a test for intelligence, and I said, his name was Mr. Jacoby, how did I do? And he said, well, you did average. You did just average. So honestly, from that early age, I was really working earnestly, giving it my best, devoted, because I wanted to have more than an average life. And really wasn't until much later that things were unfolding and there was kind of a success after success that I realized, wow, I can believe in myself. And of course, this is the part of the story here too, that we all should believe in ourselves. My God, we all have these incredible gifts. There's this diversity and unity, and really taking account of what our gifts are and how we can contribute is one of the beautiful things in life.
And like a lot of people who get so focused on what it is they're trying to build, you seem to have grasped very early on, what it was, what it would take to actually build a company that was different, that wasn't just all about the bottom line, but was about, servicing and honoring the people who worked with it, creating a community where everybody benefited. What do you think gave you that insight?
This oneness thing, which when we get to Humanities Team and that launch, of course, when we first started it, we called it Awakening the World of Oneness. But Sandy, on another level, again, I felt this when I was, even in IBM, I remember sitting there looking around the table at these brilliant people and feeling a oneness with them. And with even, vendors often are the lowest on the food chain. And as are administrative workers. And I remember looking at administrative workers and vendors and thinking, these are beautiful people. They're living their lives, evolving to their own highest selves. I could see that. And when you see that, then you want to honor that. And then when you honor that and you create a culture like that, it's really pretty magical. And of course, that's how I was able to do the things I was able to do in Silicon Valley and later now in Humanities Team.
And of course, you learn that when you do build a business like that, that, really does care about everybody, the business can't help but become successful.
Yeah, exactly. You might remember the story there, which sounds just kind of crazy, but it was so real for me there in the mid-1990s when I was going through my awakening and I realized I had a day planner. And I had my day and week and month and year well planned out and all these tasks and things. And I realized as I was going through my awakening, I had to throw away my day planner. And I'm not recommending everybody do that. This is just me. But I was so tied into those tasks that I was sharing that I felt that it was drawing down people's battery and my own instead of really increasing the energy in our battery, which is what heart-centered communication does. So I threw out that day planner and I thought I might crash the company. I thought I might throw my whole investment away by doing that because I wouldn't be as well organized as I hoped I might be. And just as you mentioned, you start talking from the heart with your team, with customers, with vendors. You may not be as 100% as well organized, but that heart-based communication is everything. And of course, as I told the story, we were growing really well, but then when I threw away my day planner, boom, we hit this whole new growth curve.
Yeah. Yeah. Astonishing, isn't it? You say that you hadn't really read much spiritual material until your mother told you that your sister was suggesting you read Neil Donald Walsh's Conversations with God. What was it about that book that woke you up with such a bang?
It was, well, first, as a lot of people know, boy, that book was on the New York Times bestseller list for 37 weeks. That's a long time. So, and you had Larry King Live and all of the media, all of the media personalities interviewing Neil then. And of course, he was a man that had been on the street there, even eating out of trash cans. And all of a sudden, there's this wisdom in these books that people, it's unbelievable, jaw-dropping. Where does wisdom come from? It's what these hosts are sharing. So now what happened to me, though, is I mentioned that even though I grew up Catholic Church and even altar boy and these things, there was a God, you know, a divine presence that was other than what my faith tradition was then. It was all loving, you know, all kind, you know, givings, a wind at my back, supporting me. And I trusted that. I felt that. And then when I read the book, it was like, oh my God, this is their words now being put to the God of my understanding. This is clearly the divine that I've known, you know, from an early age. And so on. And then, of course, there went on to become 9 books, and each one, same thing. There's a wisdom. And of course, what a lot of people believe, and I believe, is of course, we all are having conversations all the time. There's no separation. But there was a big global conversation convened by a person, Neil Donald Walsh, for the betterment of humankind, I believe, and the whole planet. And because these visions are laid out and these steps are laid out and life is explained and things. And all of that came through to me, the vision, the action steps, but most importantly, just the relationship, that divine presence that I had always known, but I'd never seen words in front of me that conveyed the fullness and depth of that divine presence that I had felt from an early age.
That was a real epiphanous moment for you, was it?
It was. Oh, gosh. My then girlfriend and now wife, I went to her. I talk about this. You know, I was like, oh, my God. You know, and of course, this was a time when I was now in the center of wealth in Silicon Valley. So this was the private jet time, the private ski area time, all of that was going on in my life, but that was nothing. It was all paling in comparison to this. It was like, oh my gosh, you know, now I have total clarity around who I am and why I'm here and the invitation in life. And of course, this then did lead over a period of years to me completely losing my passion for business, which is why, and also feeling a calling, which is why I sold those interests and left the business association and all of those things.
Yeah. Bruce Lipton said in an endorsement for your book that, you know, so many people have this yearning to do something truly meaningful, but then they're afraid the security that they're going to lose, the money, you know, they've got families to support and they don't do it. You did it, but you did it without even knowing where you were going. You just did it and waited for direction. That takes a lot of guts.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, it just, all I can say is I was just literally grabbed, you know, by the body, by the throat. And I can't even put words to the clarity that I had that with the world, even in the 90s when this was going on, it wasn't today where things are much more challenging, but they were quite challenging then. You know, global warming was very evident as well as these other things, social injustice, inequality. There were wars, though not the Ukraine war. And so there was this whole juxtaposition of me waking up to who I really am. And then also this whole context of the world that's here that really can use some help, you know, needs just a little support. Those two things just reached out to me in the most profound way. And I knew I had to leave. And there were 2 years there before we started Humanities Team where I didn't have anything to do. And it was challenging.
How did you cope?
Yeah, it was challenging. My wife says, you know, I looked a little lost then and probably was a little lost. And so I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I knew I'd been called. I trusted it. I trusted it throughout. You know, of course, the book, and we'll get into this, but I do believe now in the green room we were sharing, you know, it's such a challenging time for so many. In many ways, there's this fertile soil for people. And I think that other people are being grabbed in the same way now, you know, maybe not with the clarity yet, but with this sense of, gosh, there must be something more. there must be some more meaning, more purpose, a way to live into my values, a little, you know, more deeply. So I believe that that's actually becoming a more common thing. And hopefully through programs like this and books that are out, including my own, there become clarity as to the beautiful invitation in life and how we can find the real deliciousness in life, which was, as I shared in my book, it was not in Silicon Valley, actually. It was later in the work that I'm doing now and with these partners and colleagues all over the world.
I think there are those moments in life where the fear of not doing something becomes greater than the fear of doing it. And then we have to act. And I think that really is our soul telling us, prompting us to move. And clearly, you know, that's what happened for you. How did you begin? How did you come across, you know, this path that led to the humanity team? Because you've got these 2 years where you're a bit lost and you're not doing much and you don't know what. Where did the seed get planted?
I did meet Neil Donald Walsh there in the 1990s in the midst of that whole, you know, American dream type success. And he reached out in a newsletter and he said, are there any people out there that have substantial businesses that are integrating some of the wisdom from Conversations with God? And again, with Conversations with God now, all three books were out in the 1990s there. And I thought for sure the whole world was responding, yes, of course, you know, in communities and businesses all over the world, oh, I'm doing this with the wisdom. Why would they not? I mean, if you've got it on your book stand and it's jaw-dropping, why would we not be bringing that wisdom into our business is what I was thinking. So I responded and gave them some details. And I realized, oh, my gosh, turns out I'm actually one of a few. And he invited me and my wife to fly up and meet him. And come to know the Conversations with God Foundation there in the 1990s. And I said, hey, I'll help you out. You know, if you need somebody to do a little pro bono consulting or help you with planning sessions or whatever, I'm happy to help out. And that began a friendship that then led to this planning session there in 2003, where we launched Humanities Team.
You said that when you met with Neil and he had this idea, he presented it to several people who were there. You were the only one, ultimately, that was prepared to move forward, that saw the vision.
Yeah. And I'd been 2 years on the sideline, and there he called me there in the spring. And in Tomorrow's God, incidentally, one of the nine Conversations with God books, it's called Tomorrow's God, the whole birth of Humanity's Team is there, where Neil is asking questions and the divine God is responding. It's kind of surreal because the whole birth process is right there. Yes, I was in the planning session. It was scary, as I mentioned there in the book. Might not sound like it would be scary, but it was very scary because Neil, in that as he opened the session, said it's just going to be narrow and deep, just on going to the source problem, you know, the separation here in the world and healing this sense of separation and really seeing and feeling and living into the oneness. And in 2003, people would go cross-eyed on this, not so much today. It's more out in the mainstream. But yes. What few friends I had, I lost, you know, quite a few of those when I came back and said, this is what I'm going to do. You know, it just wasn't a socially acceptable thing at the time.
Yeah. And sharing your story, you're also sharing the story of the potential that we all have for profound change and how we can tap into greater awareness and hope for the future. Say a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we in Humanities Team, we call this the Galileo moment right now, right today. This is the Galileo moment. And let me share what I mean by that. Galileo, we probably all remember at least a little bit of the history there of science and astronomy. And this this man there in Italy in the early 1600s builds his own telescope. He learns that the Dutch actually created the telescope. He built his own and made observations of science and the universe, and was really quite esteemed. He was known as the father of modern science then, and of physics, of astronomy. And he came out with his research there in the early 1600s saying, hey, world, the ultimate reality that we've been living into, where we believe the universe is revolving around the earth, isn't so. It doesn't work that way. That we're, the earth actually is in a solar system off on the edge of the universe, and we're revolving around the sun. Now, here again, that might not sound like it's so astounding that it is going to cause a lot of trouble, but in the early 1600s, this was a huge problem that he surfaced with this research. And the church, you know, at that time was the real powerhouse in the world. And they didn't, you know, canon and biblical teachings were not this. So this presented a huge problem. Ultimately, he had to recant his research, but it was already out in the world and others had telescopes. There was no way to bring it back in. He saved his life by recanting his research. He was under house arrest to the end of his life. So his life wasn't very pretty. But basically what happened is you had one man come into these new understandings about life that changed the world for the better. So now we call today this Galileo moment because there's all of this science now that says that we're not just what we were taught in grade school and high school and college about physical bodies and things. You know, we're actually, it's a spiritual universe. It's an energetic vibrational universe. And this actually has a lot more importance than just the physical body that, you know, that we transition out of. So, and once we come to understand that science and live into it and understand, oh my gosh, you know, I'm an emanation of the one, offspring of the one, of the, where if we're scientists, we could say that the universe of the cosmos, if we're over more on the spiritual side of the divine, of God, you know, they're both actually one and the same. These things are interchangeable. And once we see that, once we educate ourselves and start living into that, then just this question you asked me, this hope, this possibility, this new world that opens up, that we can create for our kids and future generations, that a sustainable and flourishing world where we just all that we're doing is living into this new science that is here now, where you've got so many scientists affirming this energetic, vibrational, spiritual universe, up to and including the Nobel Prize for Physics in October of last year. Right. Yes. So yes, that's the invitation that we all, you know, now become the modern day Galileo, and that we experience the fruit of that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've been moving towards this new age, new spirituality, whatever you want to call it, for a long time now. It's taken science a long time to catch up with it. But in the beginning, when you started Humanity's Team 20 years ago, and as you say, you know, people were rolling their eyes when you tried to describe what you were doing. You know, it took a long while for it to become self-sustaining and, you know, I won't say profitable because it is a non-profit, but to be able to do what it set out to do. What kept you going?
Gosh, you know, I've always felt from the beginning, even back into the 90s and all the way through, that if we follow that still small voice, what we know to be true, if we give it our all, even if I hit a cliff, which several times I did, I share that in the book where I thought we were going down. But even if that happens, I hit a cliff, I go down, it doesn't work. Well, you know, I've lived a good life. I've stayed true to what I believe. I'm living my truth. And what good does it do to say, well, this is risky or this is challenging or this isn't socially acceptable, and live into something that's not your truth, that's not really why you were born to be here. So that's been my feeling even today. You know, in many ways, I've burned my ship, so to speak. You know, even if for some reason this conscious journey couldn't happen, well, I'm going to be a voice and an expression of it to the end of my life, because I believe it's true. And I believe there's an incredible invitation for people. And what could I do that would be more valuable with my life than that?
Yeah, and that's absolutely it. But a lot of people would say, oh, well, you know, I thought I was meant to do something and the universe isn't supporting me right now. So, you know, I'm not going to go any further. I love the way in the book that every experience you share with us and your own insights for yourself, what you learned about it, you also turn that around and you address the reader directly and show them how they can also take something from that, you know, making it much more personal to them. I think that really works well.
Yeah, thank you. Well, and that was really the key reason for the book is to support people on the conscious journey. There are, on the one hand, as we would share, this is absolutely the most delicious life. It's how we find true prosperity and so on. And on the other hand, there are these very arduous moments, very challenging, where there's great resistance. And I wanted to just bring in what that looked like for me. What happened? How did I feel? What did I learn? What wisdom came from me? What processes came to me to deal with that? And to lay that out, which is what I do, that you're mentioning here throughout the book, where others are coming into these arduous moments, they can go, well, there's at least one other, you know, the same thing happened. And maybe there's even a few tools there, you know, in these processes I share to make it easier.
Yeah, it helps to shift other people's perceptions. In hindsight, when you look back over the last 20 years, you know, and what is going on in the world right now, do you feel, wow, you know, we had to wait because this is the moment. This is what we were building and refining and learning and evolving into to be ready when that moment comes that people are going to need this. Do you ever feel that looking back?
Yeah. Well, it's exciting. In the green room, we were talking a little bit about this. It's sort of like, you know, in Northern California, they have this big surf competition called the Mavericks, where you've got these huge waves in the wintertime that come in and the best surfers in the whole world fly out to surf the Mavericks. And in some ways, as you mentioned, the first 20 years was riding kind of a rather flat, you know, little gentle, bumpy ocean, not the big wave. Now the big wave is coming in. Post-COVID, this I want more meaning, I want more purpose, I want to live into my values. Looking at the world around us with extreme weather and saying, isn't there an answer? Isn't there a remedy? Well, you know, we all of us in the humanities team, we have our hands up. Oh man, there is such a remedy. It's right here, right now. Many of us are living it and we just want to spread it. And so it's wonderful because there's nothing, you know, this diversity and unity or oneness or however we want to refer to this, that is what is the center of conscious living. What it really means is there really is no other. Everybody's a part of ourself, including people that really dislike us and stuff. And so where we can now, where the waves are coming in and we can just create these master classes and transformational education programs, and we're nonprofits. So we create our Tom Shoe, you know, our one for one, let's just give it away, you know, to half of the population that's on the journey and can't afford it. There's just nothing. I would rather do this than do luxurious vacations, you know, and I do a few vacations during the year, but this is the thing that is so incredibly exciting. Yeah, and it is our moment now. It really is.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break now. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is evolutionary pioneer Steve Farrell, co-founder with Donald Walsh of Humanities Team. And we're talking about his book, A New Universal Dream, which chronicles his journey from Silicon Valley to embracing a life of true success in service to humanity. We'll be back in a few moments. While we're gone, I shall answer that phone.
Om Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on OM Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive OM Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. OM Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times flagship radio show, What Is Going On? And as an author, editor and 13 times book judge who's read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors, I'm constantly asked what's really worth reading and what's not. So I created the No BS Spiritual Book Club to help you save time and money by picking the brains of discerning names who have walked this path before you. There's no catch, no fees and no BS. Just an ever-growing library of 10 best spiritual book lists from some of your favourite authors and teachers, plus free book excerpts, audios and video interviews with people like Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., David G., Lee Harris, Mark Nepo and more. From well-known classics to hidden gems you've never heard of, it's the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to enlighten your journey of self-discovery. So why not join the club? Get inspired and save money at the No BS Spiritual Book.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. Steve Farrell, can you define for me the difference between the self with a small s and the self with a capital S that you write about?
Yes. So the self with a small s is just me, Steve Farrell, this body with what kinds of things that I could, the home that I domicile myself in, my car, my vacations. It's the little me, just the where I'm not in this in this unity, diversity and unity or oneness. The self with a capital S, it's our true self. This is, again, what Sandy, you and I've been talking about here, that science is actually affirming that all of the universes, that you've got a universal consciousness that animates and permeates all of life, that we're a part of that. So we're just one of 8 billion faces of that consciousness that's here on the earth. And actually the earth itself and animal and plant life are faces in there too. So in that big self with a capital S, we've awakened. We understand who we are. We understand that we have eternal life. We understand that we have all unlimited potential, and we live into that, and we live into our connection and our communing with Source, which is our daily practice. So in that larger self, that self with a capital S, this is where we really are, I believe, living into the invitation that was always here. We just didn't have that. We had the old science growing up of just the physical body, which was the self with a small s. And as we awaken, look out on the world and see the sacred in the world and in ourselves and in each other, and see this incredible possibility where it's all about nurturing and being in service and giving ourselves away. Wow. So that's where it really, this delicious life, this prosperous life, that's where all of these things really come home, is where we understand and live into ourself with a capital S.
And this is the crux of the missing message that Neil Donald Walsh spoke about. The missing message that most religions have ignored is that we are one.
Yeah, exactly. It's the missing message, the message that the mystics brought and those who were sent over the years was really diluted, you know, that they were bringing something that was uplifting the earth. But the real reason that they came actually was just as they stated, if you go back and read what they stated, it was that I am this and you are too, you know, that you have this, you're the same offspring of the one. And Unfortunately, faith traditions have really watered that down, diluted it, or thrown it away entirely, and created all of this distance. And of course, there's more. It's more generally coming from a place of separation with distance, and which is leaves us in this quagmire, this mess that we're in today, because there's this. What happens to us individually happens out in the collective. This microcosm, macrocosm thing is real. We can see out in the world all of these challenges. We've surfaced them a few times. These are a direct result of the microcosm where we're living as our smaller self. And it's really as simple and as complex as more and more of us are living into microcosm of this bigger self, where we really, our eyes are open. We understand what it is. We're living into it. We get to that Malcolm Gladwell, 4, 6, 8, 10%, whatever that number is, and it's tipping point time, and boom, the collective now is mirroring microcosm of that bigger self. So it's just treasure all around, because even if there weren't challenges in the world, we'd want to awaken as we are talking here, Sandy, about the deliciousness of life. Who wouldn't want that? And I think many people have climbed the ladder and seen the success that I've talked about that I experienced in Silicon Valley. And I'm guessing they're listening because they experienced the same thing. They're saying it was a mirage. The oasis was always out on the horizon. It was 100 million in revenue, and then it became 200 million, and then it became 400 million. You're just always walking in this direction of more materiality. And as long as you're doing that, then you're putting great pressure on your relationships, your coworkers, but your partner, your kids, your best friends. They're feeling there's a lot of pressure on those relationships as you're just feeding that whole materialistic thing that you want to have continue. So that ladder is just leaning against the wrong wall. It's what I could see. That was a part of that whole decision to leave it. This isn't it.
Yeah. Well, we see it so often, the pursuit of millions become billions, become trillions, and as you said in the book, they're all trying to get somewhere there, wherever there is, but there is no there out there. Not at all. Yeah. We've had a lot of debate in recent years about, people are turning away from religion. It's no longer serving their needs. For me, it feels like, the old religion is dying and the new religion, or tomorrow's God, as Neil refers to it and as you've written about in the book, is now something that we are all beginning to look towards. We need that new guiding light.
We do, yeah, and it's I would call that the new spirituality. It's actually what Conversations with God calls it, is the new spirituality. And if you want to just net that down to the fewest words, is to renew and restore our connection with God and each other. So that's it. If we compact it all the way down, and once we do that, and that's really living into oneness, this diversity and unity is what that's saying. And say we understand it, now we're living into it, we're embodying it, we're expressing it. And as we do that, the magic of this connection, where in our daily practices, we feel that magic, right? That's what communing with source is. It can be walking through nature or prayer or meditation. Jude Kuravan, for her, it's chocolates and red wine, so everybody's got their own practice here. But in that practice, we really feel into it. We experience that the joy of what that is. And as we live into it, into the fullness of it, then this whole, Conversations with God brings around again and again and again, is that then you bring to yourself this question of what is the grandest version, of the greatest vision that I've ever had about myself. And this just doesn't mean that we go live in perfection or excellence. We don't ever make mistakes. I don't know anybody that would say they could do that, but we do see a vision of our most loving and honest self, and where we're in service and live into that. And it does create a beautiful life, even without perfection. It creates a really beautiful life.
Tell me about some of the programs and the resources that Humanities Team offers.
Yes, so Humanities Team, we're a 501c3 nonprofit now, 20 years old and global. We actually started it in Europe, and so we've had this global connection all the way through, really around the world. And it's a beautiful group of people that the things I'm talking about here, that dream that I'm talking about, in living, working together in an inspiring way, which is what conscious, if we were to talk about conscious business, we're bringing, creating a culture of these things that we're talking about. So you've got a dream and you've created an inspirational environment where it's about we, you know, not me, that bigger self, and which means appreciation and love and seeing people's contribution and being grateful for it. And then with the dream that we have, seeing as a nonprofit where we don't have unlimited resources, what's the one thing we could do that would really catapult, you know, propel this whole vision of making conscious living pervasive worldwide by 2040, which is the dream that we downloaded, that we hold out at 17 years from now, a world where the world is living consciously. And the thing that came to us, it was years ago, was education. Create a rich streaming, conscious streaming environment, make it as economical as possible so that people can afford it and give it away for people that can't purchase it. And then work with all of the leaders in transformational education to bring hundreds of these programs, transformational education programs, to the streaming environment. And it's more than a streaming environment. It's actually a community, because we do live programs almost every day of the week, in some cases, three or four of them, with all of the video trainings where there are hundreds of these. So, and what this allows us to do in this day and age of the internet is where you make it economical and give it away is all of a sudden you have possibility for 8 billion people to have hundreds of these video trainings and these live programs translated in their home. And as we know, you don't have to watch too many of them. You watch two or three trainings and participate in a live program or two and you get it. It's like, I feel it, you know, I'm experiencing it. And that's the whole purpose, is to really kind of start the engine, get it going in an individual. It's spread to the home. They walk it into their working work environment, spreads to the work environment. So because education has always been the most powerful thing when we talk about social change. So that's what we were called to do. And we've had just incredible resources that have come to us and partners that are that you all work with all day long at times that talk about these best practices for spirituality and science and embodied practices and philosophy and conscious business that help us to walk this journey into living fully conscious lives, where we're deepening our conscious lives every day of the year.
Humanities Team uses the five steps to peace from the new revelations in Neil Donald Walsh's Conversations with God as the anchor in all that you are being and doing. You say peace will be attained when we as human beings do what? Can you tell us about those five steps?
So these five steps to peace are beautiful. They're a part of the Conversations with God book series, the 9 books. And if you distill the five, what these five steps to peace do is they start out by saying there may be things, you know, that we don't understand about God and about life, which, of course, in today's world, many might say is true as we look at old teachings and where there was a sense of judgment and worse. Right. So that's the first step, is just to open ourselves to the science, to the spirituality, to the embodied practices. It may be. Tell us something new about God and about life. And so we start by just understanding and educating. And then the next step is, and we start, oh, well, it feels true. We go within. The whole premise here is that there is no separation. So we're going to always go within to feel what is true for us. So this is an anti-guru thing. We're never going to go out to ask somebody or we're always going to go within. What feels true for me now? Oh, it feels true. You know, that there are some new understandings here about God and about life, and then embracing them. And in that last step, as we take these five steps, we really become a new person, where we have now embraced and we're embodying these new teachings about God and about life. And in doing so, yes, we do find peace, that there's incredible peace. And I might add a lot more than just peace. There's joy, there's laughter, there's beauty, there's truth. There are all of these things that we find. And again, not that it's perfection and nirvana or something like that. In my own home, my wife and I adopted two children at birth. One of them has some things, emotional challenges that he goes through. You know, we live with those every day. So it's not like all of your challenges go away, but it's just that your life is so different. You're more kind of in flow here as you're looking at things and seeing the sacred, you know, in everybody, and certainly in your kids, you know, and in your home environment, which is loving. So you do take five steps to peace and so much more.
Yeah. Going back to your Silicon Valley days, there was a time when you were so impressed with Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, that you began teaching a course on it, you know, for your staff in the lunch hour. If you were to compile seven habits or principles for the new spirituality, what might they be?
They would be, let's just walk through some of them. One, which I've been coming back to, is this education is so crucial here. So that we really well educate ourselves as to this whole conscious living, what it is and how it works. There are many dimensions to it. For some, they want the science just to create the firm foundation. I personally didn't need that, though I work with the scientists and it's been incredible working with them and really understanding the equations and the physics and the geology and biology and so on, but really deeply educating ourselves so we really understand. And on the Humanities Team's site, humanitiesteam.org, spelled with a Y, at the top it says programs, and if you click on it, you'll see free programs. And we have all these free programs that are, and check out some of those free programs, because they'll open your eyes to things, unless there are many people that are watching here that are well down this path and maybe are already educated. But this is the starting point. And then the next thing would be the whole embody and express step. What good does it do to understand these teachings? And you've come back several times here during this conversation where you've shared that you could be afraid, you know, that you aren't really ready to take those steps, that the world around you, your family is saying, don't do that, you know. And it's been hard. I can understand why people would want to be, could stand in fear. And you know, I've been in many of those moments myself. So, but the fruit is in embodying and in expressing it, not just understanding. So, and this is where we go from logic center of the mind to wisdom center of our soul, where we embody and express it. And this is, again, the fruit is there. It's where we start experiencing all of these beautiful things. Then another step then would be engaging others. So if we're one, and we are, science is saying we are, then as we see people that are so challenged in the world today, right, with anxiety and depression and feeling disempowered and all these things, we can see that. We don't want to proselytize, you know, that you push away people that proselytize. We don't want to proselytize, but just by being open and talking about our life or offering, if we have free programs or books we want to recommend or something, just sharing, simply sharing from the truth of our heart. And that, of course, is really powerful. When we get to our why statements, which is what happens when we're talking from our heart, people can feel it and they want that too. So just sharing, engaging others and so that others can understand possibilities here. Now, then there are a lot of other things inside of these three. Dismissing these limiting beliefs would be in here. These limiting beliefs of it's just one life to live, for example. And I work with, in Humanities Team, I work with the near-death experiencers. So Dr. Evan Alexander, we're doing a program with him right now. Proof of Heaven, you know, was his New York Times bestseller. Yeah. I work with the mediums, so Suzanne Giesman and James Von Prague and Karen Noe and other mediums. And so there's no such thing as death. And I think people know that are here. It's a fiction. There's no such thing as death. You know, in my home, we No, you know, it's silly. We just had, by the way, a woman that's dear to us in humanities team, one of our colleagues, her husband 3 weeks ago, 58 years old, brain aneurysm and gone. They have two sons, 18 and 21. You can imagine how unbelievably devastating that was to her. And one of our mediums stepped in and boom, put together the channel to her husband, who's now in the non-physical realm. You wouldn't believe how it lit this family up. I mean, she knew already from the humanities team environment, no doubt, but to talk to and hear what that experience is and what they're saying about you living, going on, living your lives, there's money cannot buy, you know, something like that. That is the greatest gift. And I've seen this happen so many times that I stand and say, you know, we really need to, this is part of the Galileo moment. Come on. There's no death. We transition to the non-physical realm, and we can create pretty simple practices to ourselves be involved with that non-physical realm.
Yeah. Yeah. When you started Humanities Team, I mean, it was a big vision, a very big vision. And it, you know, it's taken 20 years to get where you are today. Do you feel like, oh, we've done what we set out to do? Or do you feel like we've got another big goal now that we're going to aim for next?
Well, so one thing for me, we've talked about the Conversations with God books. There are 9 of them. So for me, what I did when I read those is I said, now that dream right there, that dream is my dream. That dream is my dream. So, and every day I get up and it is a part of my meditation and my prayer of, okay, let's bring more of this to life. You know, this is what is going to happen. This is what is unfolding here on the earth. Certainly the time now, we're in the middle of the great shift of the ages. This pivot has begun. Let's manifest more and more and more of what is said. So it was in word. We've read the word. You know how this works. You know, it starts with the word, and then the flesh needs to engage it. We need to manifest it. It needs to take form. So that's going to take me to the end of my life and beyond to try and bring form to all of the beauty of what that loving universe and life looks like.
In the last few moments that we have, is there anything that you would like to share with our viewers for them to take away that we haven't touched upon?
Do you want me to go to the four things?
Well, we still have a few moments. If there's something else, if that is what you want to leave people with, perfect. But if there's anything else you'd like to mention before we get there.
Yes. So let me just, in my book, if you go to anewuniversaldream.com, so there you'll see a little more about the book. We open up the first 4 chapters there. And we give away my masterclass. I created my own masterclass called Conscious Leadership with all of these things that we're talking about. And you just enter your receipt number from wherever you bought the book, and we unlock the masterclass. So it's kind of a 2-for-1. As a nonprofit, we're not, you know, again, I'm not in my Silicon Valley days. We're not trying to get the top and bottom line. We're certainly not getting it this way. But that's the whole point is, the wisdom, you know, what's happened, the 50-year true story, you know, let's get it out in the world. So you'll see that that invitation there at anewuniversaldream.com.
Okay. So there's no better way in my mind to part with our audience than to give them or pose to them the questions, the 4 what if questions that Humanities Team encourages everyone to deeply consider. Tell us what those questions are.
Yes, and I love this. This is really a beautiful thing that you've created, Sandy. So let's get to the 4 what ifs. So the first what if is, what if before you came into this life, you were there with the one, who we call the divine, or you could call or say God or universe or cosmos there before you came into this life, and where you said, you put up your hand and you said, I will go down. I will be a part of this great shift. I will be a catalyst. I will help propel it. I will help create the synergy that takes us there. What if you did that? Now, what if then you we're here. And just like me and all of us, you know, they say that we're God doesn't call the qualified. God qualifies those who are called. It was true for me, for all of us. If you've heard Michael Beckwith's story, right? We were all just walking around in our illusions and things. What if, though, now, you know, you're coming into the fullness of awakening, of really deeply understanding you are the light. You know, you are embodying that. You are the expression of it here on the planet. And then what if you decide to live in the grandest version of the greatest vision you've ever had about yourself? And you're not pushing it away because you're not saying, I have to be perfect all the time, or I have to be excellent all the time. You don't. We take that off the table. No. But what if you say, I will do that. I will, to the best of my ability, I'll live in the grandest version of the greatest vision that I've ever had about myself. And then your final what if then at the end of your life, what if you help this whole world to unfold, to transition into this new universal dream, where we're a mature species, where we're living in a loving, kindness, joy-filled, peace-filled world, where our children and future generations are living in a sustainable and flourishing.
I have to interrupt you, and we're going to have to leave it here because we're almost out of time. But I love those four what ifs. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your incredible journey.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Sandy. It's been my pleasure.
You're so welcome. Steve Farrell's book, A New Universal Dream, My Journey from Silicon Valley to a Life in Service to Humanity, is published by Light on Light Press. For more information on Steve Farrell and Humanity's teams, masterclasses, programs, free courses, live events, and New Humanity Stream Plus, visit stevecfarrell.com and Humanity Stream Steam. humanitiesteam.org. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'll be back at the same time next week with another edition of What Is Going On. Till then, it's goodbye from me and a real heartfelt thank you to Steve Farrell.
Thanks again for having me. See-